breaking news and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when late tonight, early tomorrow morning, there is going to be a moonrise of a gigantic big full moon. It is called a pink moon. It's going to look bigger than usual. The biggest moon of the year. Does it signify something? Does it signify the end of the world, as some people are saying, or a new beginning? We will talk about that. We're also waiting for the president's press briefing. We'll go to it live when the president speaks to the country about the progress against the COVID-19 pandemic. We will also take a listen to what one Hollywood luminary has to say at a time of crisis and pandemic. His name is John Voight. I know him fairly well. Also, questions about, okay, where is God in all of this? And a consideration of why it is that Joe Biden is even weaker at this point of his campaign than Hillary Clinton was in 2016. She lost. Will it be different for Joe Biden? We will get to all of that on the Michael Medved Show. First up, John Voight has been a Hollywood star, literally major star, for more than 50 years. His Oscar-nominated role, he later won an Oscar for Coming Home with Jane Fonda, but he had an Oscar-nominated role in Midnight Cowboy, which was 1969, it came out. John recently has been active on behalf of all kinds of charities, and he's an incredibly generous with his time and with his money and with himself. And he has now taken it upon himself. I spent about a week with him back in 2012 campaigning for Mitt Romney, and we were traveling around the country together doing a series of public events. And it was an amazing occasion. And John now has a special video called We Will Rise. And he sends it out for Holy Week on social media. And it's aimed at everybody, concluding with this message.
And through this fear that all may fear, fear not, because Jesus, Moses, all the saints, prophets of ancient times, all the scriptures written for Hinduism, Judaism, Christianity, all have been with America, for America. She is the land of freedom. She holds her sign, her torch, for all to remember what she stands for. That is God's freedom, our truths, and God's beam of his glow to show each one that we will prevail, we will win, no matter the pain, the loss, because each one, each soul, is gifted a flicker of hope, for he shines with each. So we hold all dear, and we give this nation, all nations, a push through this dark, for he has said, let there be light. And on this day, we salute President Trump and his team, and we bless these men and women with our unconditional love and prayers, for they have guided our nation under God. Amen.
Okay. That's John Voight. And I know that there are people out there who are hyper partisan who are saying, well, how come he calls for blessings on President Trump and his team? Because he's the president. And he's the only one we have. Right now, I'm pleased to say, by the way, that that the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, the Honorable Boris Johnson, is in stable condition. He was worse before. And he has not had to use the ventilator, which is standing by. And our prayers should be on Prime Minister Johnson, because when you think about that country And they don't have the Constitution we have. We have a Constitution that has a vice president built into it. The vice president has been voted on. Everybody who voted for President Trump voted for Vice President Pence at the same time. They don't have a clear succession like that in Britain. And he's dominated the foreign secretary, whose name is Dominic Raab, as handling the prime minister's duties while he's indisposed. But it's one of those other indications that in Britain there is great anxiety about this. And not because everybody loves Boris Johnson, though he just did win a landslide victory. It's because it is very natural. It is the same reason that when we have synagogue services, we have a congregation that is very divided in the approach to President Trump. Some people who love him, some people who emphatically despise him. But nobody objects when we stand up together as a congregation asking for blessings on the president and the vice president and all the properly constituted officers of government. The text of the blessing says. And that is certainly something that's appropriate, it seems to me, in this crisis. And bless you, John Voight, for beautiful sentiments. This came in, and it's not such a beautiful sentiment. Jeremy checked for me and called to my attention. Over at Amazon, there are a whole bunch of reviews for my new book, God's Hand on America, that have piled up. And 84% of the reviews are the highest possible review, the best possible review, 5 stars. And they're right. This is a terrific book, and it is about 12 stories that show God's presence in protecting and sustaining and promoting the United States. Not as a reward because we're such great people, but the same way that in the Bible God uses the people Israel. They're not great people. They're stiff-necked. They're stubborn. They're miserable. They're often wretched. But they are the chosen instrument for God to do his will. The same is true for the United States. And the reason I'm mentioning my book right now is there was one review and that was a 1-star review, which is the lowest review you can give a book. I mean, again, 84% were the highest possible review. 1% a very negative review. And I wanted to share that with you because, well, kind of that's the way I am. This came in, this review, and it says, "Oh, the absurdity." Reviewed in the United States on January 14th, 2020. How about God changing Archduke Ferdinand's route in 1914 to enable him to avoid his assassination, thereby preventing World War I, keeping the Romanovs in power, denying Lenin his opportunity to bring communism into the world, preventing the rise of Hitler, preventing the Holocaust, World War II, and the Cold War. Sure, monumental world events hinge on a multitude of events, some of them seemingly trivial, but having huge repercussions. But to think that Medved or any other charlatan is able to discern a divine pattern is absurd. Okay, it's very, very obvious that whoever wrote this review didn't read a page of my book, and I'm sure never acquired it. I wish that he would, because my argument is not that there are little events that are isolated. It's that there is a pattern going back in our history of those events working to America's benefit. In other words, what he was talking about, the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand in Sarajevo, in what at the time was disputed between Serbia and Austria-Hungary, that it's absolutely true that there was a change of the plan for the where he was going to take his carriage that allowed Gavrilo Princip the opportunity to shoot him, and that had the consequence of World War I. But how does that action regarding Austria-Hungary have anything to do with the United States? In other words, we have actions like that, like the attempted assassination of Franklin Roosevelt just 2 weeks before he became president, which would have provoked a constitutional crisis and would have installed somebody who would never have responded to world events like the rise of Hitler, like the fascism in Italy, like the rise of the Japanese militarism, the Japanese, would never have responded to those events the way that Roosevelt did. And the attempted assassination of Roosevelt in Miami, Zangara, who fired the shots, missed literally by a couple of feet. He was shooting at Roosevelt from close up. Roosevelt was seated at the back seat of a car. And the story is incredible. So much so that Philip K. Dick wrote his Man in the High Castle based on a whole alternate reality that he had sketched in and put in this novel that was based upon the fact that Zangara, this anarchist who was trying to kill the president-elect, didn't miss, that he hit Roosevelt and killed him, and that John Nance Garner, Cactus Jack, became president. All of this is fascinating, and the point is, he says, but to think that Medved or any other charlatan, okay, you may think that all of the leaders of this country, George Washington and Alexander Hamilton and John Adams and Abraham Lincoln, and yes, Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan and everyone else you want to mention who is substantive has seen God's hand in guiding this country. America is here for a purpose. And the purpose is not to feel sorry for ourselves. It's not to feel guilty. It's to feel grateful and to continue our work in uplifting humanity. And by the way, if you purchase a copy of my book, which I would love you to do, it comes together with a 3-month new subscription as a Medhead. You can find it at MedvedHistoryStore.com or at MichaelMedved.com. And I hope you will check out so that you can actually read the book, unlike this response to it, that you can actually read the book and enjoy it at MichaelMedved.com. We are standing by for the president's press conference. I wanted to cover this story. Well, first of all, John Harwood of NBC was commenting after President Trump challenged that Chinese reporter from Phoenix News who has Hong Kong associations. He challenged her, he said, "Where are you from? You're from China." He said something that is entirely wrong, and I think it deserves correction. Here's what he said.
So the president was lashing out again at the legitimacy of criticism itself. He went after a reporter and said, "Do you work for China?" He criticized the HHS inspector general, saying, "Did this person work for President Obama?" This is the kind of thing he did, we remember, in 2016 mm-hmm. when he said, "Oh, well, it's a Mexican judge. I'm trying to build the wall. They can't be fair." That is not the case. There is expertise within the government. He has disregarded that expertise. And now he's trying, I think he feels a sense of injustice that the good conditions that he was running for re-election on have been taken away. And he's reacting in a way, frankly, that authoritarian leaders behave. You can't question me. I'm the leader of the country. What I say is true. And we can all see what the consequences in American life are at this moment. That is on his watch, and he's got to take responsibility for it.
Okay, John Harwood. First of all, of course he's right, and bringing back some of those old standards that President Trump was wrong to attack Judge Curiel, saying he was a Mexican judge and he couldn't be fair. It was shameful. It was wrong. He said that during the campaign before he was president. But to claim that he's acting like an authoritarian, let me tell you, John Harwood, authoritarians don't take open questions from the press. They don't. And the fact that he answers back to the press at some point and bickers with them, I think it is demeaning to him. I wish he wouldn't do that. But to say that that is authoritarian, you don't see people like Viktor Orban doing that. You don't see Vladimir Putin doing that. You don't see Xi Jinping doing that. Or you don't see Kim Jong-un doing that. President Trump loves the political game and he loves the back and forth. And he loves the idea of actually going after the press. I think particularly now that's a shame. I wish he wouldn't. But the truth of the matter is that he remains determined to win a second term. And there's a piece today by Byron York looking at all the recent polling that suggests that he is very likely to succeed. Let me go to Ed in Bellingham, Washington. Ed, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Thank you, Michael Medved. You guys have been very good to me to give me a chance to say anything on the air. Michael, Israel was destroyed in about 732 by Assyria and dispersed forever. Judah was destroyed in about 587 by Babylonia. The Jews have experienced the Holocaust. Are you sure you want to claim that the Jews are God's chosen instrument?
Well, it's not whether I want it or not. to say that that is not true would be to reject the entire Old Testament.
Well, I know that you're not likely to do that. I know.
No, but you're right. I do think that being God's chosen instrument doesn't mean it's all sunshine and flowers. The United States has gone through enormous trials and tribulations, but we remain the indispensable country in the world. It's one of those things where I always talk about what would the world be like without the U.S. And it's why I believe that God continues to favor and protect America. And by the way, the whole purpose of the kinds of suffering and exile, and this is what most of the prophetic books are really about. It's a purpose of purification and uplift. And if I can, Ed, let me say also a word about our Passover holiday, which comes up tomorrow night. And it's going to be weird this year because we usually celebrate Passover with big groups of people, big extended family. We're not really allowed to this time. It's my wife and me. But it reminds me of one aspect of the story of the Exodus, which is very, very important, it seems to me, in terms of the Passover context. When we celebrate liberation from slavery, it's not as if, okay, the Jewish people left Egypt and then, boom, all of a sudden we're liberated and we're fat and happy and free and enjoying life. No, first, there are 50 days of trekking all the way out to the wilderness to Mount Sinai, where the law is given, and there's lots of complications and difficulties there. And then 40 more years wandering in the wilderness before you can get into the promised land. The idea being that freedom, liberation, arrival at the promised land isn't automatic. It isn't instantaneous. It isn't easy. It is a rough and tough, but ultimately ennobling process. And that's a Passover theme that I hope to emphasize this year for the holiday. Ed, I greatly appreciate your call. When we come back, we're still waiting for the presidential presser, but we'll get to it as soon as the president does. The polls show Joe Biden leading President Trump. And according to Real Clear Politics average of polls matching Trump versus Biden, Biden is leading in every one of them by anywhere from 3 to as much as 10 points. His average lead in those polls is 5.5 points. So why is Trump not worried about that? Well, because at this time, 4 years ago, he was twice as far behind against Hillary Clinton. So what happened? Were the polls inaccurate then? No, they were accurate, but it's a snapshot in time. And Byron York makes the case that when you look at the way this is likely to unfold with the Wisconsin primary today, events do seem to be leaning toward the president's reelection. Tell you why, coming up on the Medved Show. Michael Medved Show. Speaking about a piece by Byron York, and we're going to send it out in our newsletter, I think, that will go out at the end of this week. And you can sign up for the newsletter. It's completely free, by the way, at michaelmedved.com. And it's a piece that Byron wrote for the Washington Examiner that actually examines the polling. And if you look at 10 different polls that were taken at this point in the campaign in the beginning of April, 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton had an average 10.5% lead over Donald Trump. It's just an unbelievably big lead in trial heats. Biden has half that much lead. Why is he so much weaker? And Byron York argues that there are three different reasons people give. They'll say, well, number one, it's the coronavirus factor. People are rallying behind the president. Well, that's not true, because Trump's approval rating is at 47%, which is very typical for him. It hasn't skyrocketed above that. And that's not why he's running much closer to Biden than he was against Hillary. And then other people would say, well, it's because of Bernie Sanders. Well, Bernie Sanders was more of a problem for Hillary. He was, because he was still very actively campaigning, and he was even more bitter. This is pretty amazing. And then the third point that people bring up is that it could be because there's just something about Joe Biden that really is a big problem. And I think that is it. He writes, Byron York, there could be just something about Biden that voters are not particularly thrilled about. It might be persistent doubts about the physical stamina to hold the world's most demanding job starting at age 78. And yes, of course, what happened to Boris Johnson underlines that. Or related to that, a feeling that Biden, who first entered the Senate in 1973, nearly a half century ago, was a man of the past. There is that feeling. The Washington Post poll, it just happened. And they asked people, are you enthusiastic about supporting Trump? And Trump supporters, 86%, said they were enthusiastic. 74% were enthusiastic about Biden. That represents, it seems to me, big encouragement for the president. An incumbent always has an advantage. And particularly if the situation with the virus and the economy has begun to turn around. Let me get to Tom in Glendora, California. Tom, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Thank you very much, Michael. God bless our sweet granddaughters, those precious angels in this time of depression and crisis. My question,
amen, Michael, but no depression allowed. Go ahead. Just exaltation. Go ahead.
All right. My question, if God forbid the Democrats win the presidency, the House, and the Senate, my horrible fear is that they would have the power to call a national emergency. Dennis Prager mentioned this. Then would come AOC's gangrene New Deal, which would decimate the economy. Then would come some version of Bernie's Medicare for All, and couple that with the higher taxes, the open borders agenda, the anti-free market animus that is their trademark. I know I'm sounding very negative, but would there be any hope, if that happened, that and they implemented any or all of this, that the country could ever recover? I would never have said this in all my life, but I am so worried now.
Tom, first of all, it is very unlikely, it seems to me, that the Democrats sweep the Senate and sweep the presidency and sweep the House. Under the current polling, that's unlikely. Secondly, they had all that. They won with Obama. Obama won in a landslide the first time. He won by 7 points, which is a lot in today's politics. And he had the Senate. He had 60 votes in the Senate, and he had the House. And all they got out of it was this lame and hateful Obamacare. But the idea that there was, and remember, people were very afraid. Obama talked much more than Biden is talking about fundamentally transforming the country. And the whole idea of declaring a national emergency, we have a Supreme Court. We have district courts. We have that regardless of how the election turns out, there will be a strong Republican presence in both the Senate and in the House. It's not overwhelming. And the founders did very well by this country. And I think alarmism on the right is ridiculous. Alarmism on the left is ridiculous. There are people who are saying Trump is going to postpone the election and he's going to exceed constitutional authority. There's no evidence of that at all. Look, I think what is particularly worrisome right now is the idea that we don't even know what you get with Biden, because we'll see who he chooses as his vice president. But the man's 78 years old. And again, events in Britain in the middle of a pandemic show that the vice presidential selection is always important. But this could be the most important ever. There is breaking news, and not on the vice presidential selection. We won't hear about that for a while. I mean, we're just getting the returns from the Wisconsin primary. What a mess later today. Twitter founder Jack Dorsey announced today, just now, he's going to transfer $1 billion of his equity in Square to a new foundation that will support coronavirus relief efforts before transitioning later to focus on other causes. In a Twitter thread, the billionaire CEO explained that the newly founded Start Small Foundation would support global COVID-19 relief efforts before transitioning after the pandemic's resolution to focus on supporting universal basic income experiments, as well as health and education efforts aimed at helping young women. Okay, this is the kind of greedy billionaire that Bernie Sanders wants not to exist. Billionaires shouldn't exist. We don't want them to exist. Okay, and again, when he talks about supporting universal basic income experiments, Oprah Winfrey tried something of the same thing. The idea that giving people money is a way to fix what's broken in their lives, it's part of a helping process. But if it's just a question of handing people money, it doesn't work. It's like building housing projects. AOC was mentioning Robert Moses before. He was the master builder, that's what he was called in the Joseph Caro biography of him, who tore down a bunch of neighborhoods in New York City and put up those high-rise, glittering new apartment buildings that were supposed to be public housing. And the idea was you get rid of slums by tearing down the slums and putting people in nice buildings. The problem is, if you don't change the people at the same time, it tends not to work. And what's interesting is many of those housing projects, those government projects, in Chicago in particular, places like the Townsend Homes and the Cabrini Green project in Chicago, Robert Taylor Homes they had in Chicago, those have been torn down now because they very visibly didn't work. On the Michael Medved Show, when we come back, we're still waiting on the president and his presser. He may still be conferring with some of his aides and associates about what he's going to say today. But what I want to share with you is the passing of two extremely beloved and revered figures, nothing to do with the coronavirus, who illustrate, it seems to me, some of what's worth remembering in this holiday season and a season of pandemic. We'll get to that coming up on The Medved Show. The president is now speaking. He just took the podium. He was expressing his support for the people of New York who are bearing the brunt of this pandemic. And he also asked for prayers for Boris Johnson, the prime minister of the United Kingdom. Here's the president.
And we know that's going to unfortunately happen. This is a monster we're fighting. But signs are that our strategy is totally working. Every American has a role to play in winning this war. And we're going to be winning it, and we're going to be winning it powerfully. And we'll be prepared for the next one should it happen, but hopefully it won't. Our massive airlift operation for critical supplies, it's called Project Airbridge, continued today as five massive planes, flights, landed in the United States, packed with personal protective equipment. And our nation's heroic healthcare workers will be the beneficiaries of that. 27 more flights are scheduled in the near future over the next couple of weeks. The Army Corps of Engineers is constructing facilities that will support more than 15,000 hospital beds to treat patients in need. So they're building now approximately 15,000. They just completed the big one in New York. They just completed and are in the process of continuing in Chicago. And many other places. They're incredible. The Army Corps of Engineers, we owe them a lot. What they're able to do in such a short period of time, they'll build these massive facilities, 2,000 beds in 4 days. So it's really something very special. I know I was in the construction industry, and you don't see that happen very often. I want to remind governors and emergency managers that sharing real-time data with us about equipment and their needs is very important. All of their supplies, hospital occupancy is critical. A lot of the occupancy is really getting a little bit lower than anticipated, and that's good. We sort of thought that was going to happen. And we're getting along very well with the governors. This whole situation with respect to talking to us about equipment and equipment needs, giving us a little bit of lead time, so important. All the supplies, we're getting it to everybody like they never thought possible, but we'll ensure that we can rapidly deploy federal assets where and when they're needed, especially on ventilators. We're actually getting some ventilators back. As you know, the state of California was great. They sent some back, which they won't need, and Washington State likewise. And we have some others coming back, so we're using them in areas we need them. We are pressing forward aggressively on the scientific frontier of the medical war. The companies I've spoke to, the four leading, I call them the genius companies, they're doing incredibly well with respect to cures and also with respect to a vaccine that's going to protect us totally, protect us. And they have some great potential. It's going to take a little while yet, but they have some great potential, some great early results. And the governor's been working hard.
At his daily press briefing,
hard with the governors. There's been great coordination, especially over the last little while. We've given them a lot of equipment, a lot of ventilators, but a lot of equipment of all types. And I will protect you if your governor fails. If you have a governor that's failing, we're going to protect you. But the governors are working well with us over the last period of time. Today, in our stockpile of ventilators, and again, we need the stockpile so we can immediately move them from place to place wherever the monster hits. It's a monster. We have 8,675 ventilators right now in stock, ready to move. And we have all sorts of incredible soldiers. Our military is going to move them should they be needed in, as an example, if we need additional in New York or the New York City area. You have state, you have city, and spoke to Mayor de Blasio, and we really have a great, well-coordinated campaign with Mayor de Blasio. It's been really good. Spoke to Governor Cuomo. It's been great coordination. So if they need something, we have it. If Louisiana needs something, we have it. Same thing with Michigan. Same thing with Illinois. There are certain spots that are very hot. And we'll see what happens. But we'll know pretty much we'll have time, and we'll be able to move it. In addition to the 8,675 ventilators, we have 2,200 arriving on April 13th. We have 5,500 arriving on May 4th. These are ones that we're building for the most part. And we have, as you know, great companies building them. Ford, General Motors, GE. We have really some great companies that are doing it. On May 18th, we have 12,000. On June 1st, we have 20,000. On June 29th, we have 60,000 ventilators coming. 60. So we have a total of 110,000 ventilators coming over a short period of time. I don't think we'll need them. Hopefully we won't need them. I don't think we'll need anywhere near them. But we'll have them for the future, and we'll also be able to help other countries who are desperate for ventilators. The UK called today, and they wanted to know would it be possible to get 200, and we're going to work it out. We got to work it out. They've been great partners, United Kingdom, and we're going to work it out for them. So they wanted 200. They needed them desperately. We now have 10 drugs in active trials, with 15 more soon to follow, as well as two vaccine candidates in active clinical trials. We'll do whatever it takes to secure needed medical supplies and bring more production of essential medicines back to our shores. We're doing that. We're bringing them back to our shores. A lot of these companies, they went a little bit haywire. They went away from this great country, and they had them produced elsewhere. So we're going to start bringing them back. And I've been talking about that for a long time, not only with medical, but lots of other things. America continues to perform more tests than any other nation in the world, and I think that's probably why we have more cases. Because when you look at some of these very large countries, I know for a fact that they have far more cases than we do, but they don't report them. We've performed 1.87 million tests today, so that's 1,870,000 tests. Think of that, 1,870,000 tests to date. And now we're performing them at a level that nobody's ever seen before. As we announced yesterday, CVS testing sites in Georgia and Rhode Island will be using Abbott Labs rapid 5-minute tests. We're down to now 5 minutes. It's a 5-minute test, so that people can get their results back very quickly. And we're actively engaging on the problem of increased impacts. This is a real problem, and it's showing up very strongly in our data on the African-American community. And we're doing everything in our power to address this challenge. It's a tremendous challenge. It's terrible. And provide support to African-American citizens of this country who are going through a lot, but it's been disproportional. They're getting hit very, very hard. In fact, while we have Tony here, I'd like to maybe have you come up and address that one, and then I'll continue. But if you could address that, it would be great, Tony, please.
He's calling Dr. Anthony Fauci.
We have a particularly difficult problem of an exacerbation of a health disparity. We've known literally forever that diseases like diabetes, hypertension, obesity, and asthma are disproportionately afflicting the minority populations, particularly the African Americans. Unfortunately, when you look at the predisposing conditions that lead to a bad outcome with coronavirus, the things that get people into ICUs that require intubation and often lead to death, they are just those very comorbidities that are unfortunately disproportionately prevalent in the African American.
We will give you highlights of the rest of the press briefing tomorrow. And we're also speaking to George Will tomorrow. George Will, one of the great conservative voices ever in this country. He's lived through a lot of history. How does he place our facing this pandemic and